You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
And a big warm welcome to Simon Grigg. Are you there, Simon?
Yes, I am. Yep.
Beaming in all the way from Thailand.
Yep, Bangkok.
Bangkok. All right. Now, of course, this month, Audio Culture celebrating 10 years young.
10 bloody years.
10 years, my God. Yeah. it seems like a flash, but, you know, it's actually longer than that because we started working towards it about maybe 13 years ago.
Yes.
So, yeah, 10 years live.
Mm-hmm. 10 years live, but, I mean, basically the go-to point on the internet for anyone wishing to buff up on a music history in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So many incredible stories on there, so much great journalism accompanied with some fantastic images and video and everything. So, I mean, Simon, do you have any favourite content?
I've got lots of favourite content, I think. I mean, I've obviously been involved since before it was born, but so I kind of know everything on the site intimately. But if it came down to oh my God, there's so many amazing things on there. I mean, I love some of Chris Burke's work on the 50s and 60s, the early 60s. It's amazing stuff we didn't know about before.
Yes.
But also one of my favourite series is the Paul Hewson series. It was done by Glenn Moffat. You know, Paul Hewson was the songwriter for Dragon, and he died very young. He had a few substance issues and things like that. But he wrote all these classic New Zealand songs, which were huge in Australia, you know, the April Sun in Cuba and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was virtually nothing online about Paul's life, as it was with lots of things about New Zealand music. There was nothing online before we came along and did them,
mm-hmm.
which I'm quite proud of. But I'd approached Glenn Moffat, who'd done a post on his own website about herbs, and said, you know, I'd love you to do a herb story. And he said, I'd rather do a story on some of the Dragon guys. So he did a three-parter on Paul Hewson. And the first part was his early years in New Zealand, playing bands in Auckland, basically, and getting around. The second part was called Into the Dragon's Lair, and that was like going to Australia, but he was headhunted into Australia by the band, and he played with them, and of course the whole Mr. Asia thing sort of enveloped them, and for the worse. But all that story is in there. Then the last part is about his last years with Dragon, then coming back to New Zealand and playing with Dave McCartney and dying. So it's very evocative, and it's very long form.
Mm-hmm.
When we first started Audio Culture, the funders and various people I had to kowtow to in Wellington were all saying, you can't do long stories. No one's going to read long stuff about New Zealand music. And I was told the maximum story should be 800 words.
Yes.
That was going to be
very
nothing.
Short. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought, you know, bugger it. And I went out there and commissioned people to write what they felt they had to say.
Mm-hmm.
So Glenn Moffat turned up with these very long form stories, and I posted them, and they're amazing. And they were huge. So I was able to take those back to Wellington to the funders and the board and things like that down there and say, look, guys, I'm sorry, but you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
People want to read about New Zealand music in depth.
Mm. There's an appetite for it. I mean, once you start on one of these stories, I mean, for me, some of my favorite writings from Gareth Shute, and just, you know, it might be a multi-part story, but once you're in, man, you commit to these things.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, Andrew Schmidt did some great stuff. And in the early days, we did an Andrew Schmidt story on the Gordons, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was about, and I went live when the site went live. And the day I went live, I found that somebody else, and I won't mention any names, had edited it
mm-hmm.
without talking to me.
Yes.
They edited out about 30% of the story. So I pulled it offline straight away and re-edited all the stuff back in there again and sort of yelled at people. But yet, you know, people go out there and they buy big, thick books on music.
Yes.
So why would they, like, 2,000, 3,000 words on a on someone they love, who's someone they can see live on the weekend.
Of course, yeah, it's it makes total sense. Yeah,
yeah.
Now, so, yeah. I guess we're celebrating 10 years of audio culture. You've selected a bunch of music. We've got, I think we managed to, we've got all the tracks here this evening.
We've got all five of them.
Well, now, I mean, are there some stories behind the tracks that you've selected? Are they tied? Yeah, they're obviously tied in with articles.
Well, kind of, yeah. Mostly these, I'm not allowed to vote in this thing, right? This,
yes.
Because I'm staff. Now, I'm just trying to find where I sent it through to you. So
what are the terms and terms and condition? Can BFM staff maybe still win the Torrens turntable and the $500
from Real Groovy? Is that allowed?
Well, if you give me a call afterwards and I'll have a chat to you. About,
okay,
you
know. Okay, brilliant. We'll take
I'll
it
sign
off
up
here
with the different emails.
So, what I did, I'm not allowed to vote, and I'm which is annoying because I'd like to vote, but it's also a bonus because I probably wouldn't be able to get down to less than about 15 or 20 albums that I would like to vote for. So I thought I'd just put up tracks from some of the albums that I might vote for if I did vote. Mm-hmm. And then the story about those things I can talk about.
Yes. Okay. So where shall we start? Where shall we start with?
Why don't you start with the first one on my list, which is the Split Enz track from Mental Notes.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Judd track called Titus.
Yes.
We're going to play it?
Lights up.
Tell us a story about it. Why don't you?
Okay. So I was a kid in Auckland. I was a teenager and I was kind of passionate about New Zealand music, but mostly it was New Zealand music was singles and it was the killer singles one after the other, but there were very, very few albums and what albums that had come through didn't, they were okay. There was the odd album that came through I was like quite enjoyed, but not very many. And then in the mid-70s, I started following a band around Auckland City called Split Enz with a D and an S. No Z on the name at that stage. And they were interesting. They didn't play pubs. They played the odd club, which is where I first saw them. But they were completely different. Quirky and Lighty is ahead of the sort of like 60s garage blues rock that most New Zealand bands were doing at the time. So I became a huge fan and I saw every gig I think they played between about 1974 and 1976. And in 75, they released the album. I think it was 75 it came out. The Mental Notes album came out and I kind of camped outside a record shop in High Street and waited for the boxes to turn up from the record shop on a Monday morning, from the record company on a Monday morning. It was Mental Notes. And I think it was the album that kind of changed. It changed everything in New Zealand music. It was that it all of a sudden albums really, really mattered.
Mm.
And it was a line in the sand, basically. And once you've gone beyond that, off we went. So, yeah.
All right, let's hear Titus.
Coming back to me, babe.
Had a couple of texts through, Simon. Someone's saying that the mandolin reminds this particular texture of Battle of Evermore by Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, someone, I suppose so, yeah.
Someone else has said, and Ragnarok, question mark.
Well, Ragnarok came later. Well, they were still around, but their albums were a little bit later, I think. Well, maybe, yeah.
Excellent. Well, if you've just tuned in, if you've just joined us, we've got Simon Grigg on the line. All the way from Bangkok. We're celebrating 10 years of audio culture this month. I mean, the go-to point really on the internet for everything you need to know about New Zealand music. Are there any areas that you guys are looking toward at the moment, or any stories on any bands that you think still need coverage?
Well, there's always bands because it's an evolving industry. Mm. In 10 years' time, I mean, when we first started off in 2013, had a rule that you had to be around for a couple of years at least and have made some impression to get onto the site.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as time goes, that 2 years travels forward, obviously. So here we are in 2023. So we have bands from 2021 who need covering as well. Plus, you know, there's so much stuff turns up in New Zealand music that we don't want to be a museum as mm-hmm. such. We want to be a living thing as well.
Yes, of course. I mean... What am I trying to ask? I mean, with a fresh band, how does one go about putting together a profile or some stories on, you know, relatively new music?
Well, we find a writer who's in the scene, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris Burke is now the content director since I stepped back a few years back. But we have a content advisory panel as well, which meets every couple of months, and we talk about all this sort of stuff.
Mm.
And you sort of, it's really up to, I mean, a writer can pitch a story to Chris. The content panel can go, well, here's a new band we should be covering. But it's kind of instinctive a lot of the way too. You know who's important. You know who's going to be important in the years to come, and you've got to cover them. So you kind of just follow your instincts, which is what we did from day one.
Yes.
But it's a matter also of making sure you have writers who are in touch.
Because, mm-hmm.
I mean, here am I. I'm an old man these days. I can't write about a 21-year-old playing at Whammy or something like that. It's not fair on the band.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve to be covered.
Of course. Now, I mean, just digging back into the vaults of music in Aotearoa, are there any bands that you feel are still underappreciated or still, you know, like...
Well, that's a big question. There are bands that are on audio culture, I think, aren't appreciated enough,
mm-hmm.
which is maybe someone like Car Crash Set. Mm-hmm. Car Crash Set, I think, were extraordinary. You know, they were... That whole thing that happened at Auckland in the 1980s, the electronica thing that happened, was kind of shadowed by the giant of Flying Nun. Mm. And yet there were such amazing, interesting things happening in Auckland, which kind of got lost. And happily in recent years they've been sort of rediscovered by new generations.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the Polynesian and Maori funk and stuff like that from the 60s and 70s and 80s, you know, we lost track of that stuff.
We don't.
So, excuse me. One of the big things I think with audio culture too was one of the reasons it started was a lot of the websites and a lot of the online presence of bands was disappearing.
Mm.
So you're in a band, release an album or two, band breaks up, who maintains the website?
Yeah, I mean, MySpace is gone, your buddy, other things gone, your at Hotmail Live or whatever's gone, your email address is gone,
All the stuff's gone. So sooner or later you start to be forgotten.
Mm.
So our job was basically to go and make sure people weren't forgotten and make sure going forward people aren't forgotten as well. So I think one of the things that we've done, which I'm really proud of, is the coverage of all the Murray show bands.
Mm. Crucial.
Because it's crucial, such a huge part of our history.
Massive.
And yet there was virtually nothing. There was a Facebook page, I think, which one of the family members had, and that was kind of about it.
I mean, there's also that connection to the pub scene, which I think we covered a few months ago, which to me is just mind-blowing about, you know, these people are making a living playing pubs in the suburbs like five nights a week. And you I mean, I haven't been witness or to a band, probably a local band that's played five nights a week.
You know, and then we went to Sydney and took over there as well. Exactly. In a lot of cases.
Yeah. It's just, you see an international touring band come down here and you go, God, they're so tight. But the thing is, people had access to a band that played all the time, you know, like in the 80s. It's just mind-blowing, you know?
And the touring thing as well. You know, you could tour the country up and down the country and play every night of the week. I was managing the Screaming Mimis in the early 80s.
Yes.
And we could go and do, on a Friday night, you could do three nights, or Friday, Saturday night, you could do both nights at a pub. Around, then you'd go up to Main Street and you'd play after that. So you'd play for like 5 hours by the time you went home.
Mm.
And you could do that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday if you really wanted to.
No wonder they were so good back in the old days.
I remember when the Mimi started off, they were pretty like average live. So I set them off on a 6-week tour of New Zealand and they came back and they were shit hot.
Mm.
Wow.
If you're playing every single night, you get good.
How was the response in sort of regional areas, Simon, to bands like that? Because obviously you've got a youth, you know, the demographics, you know, there's a new culture, youth culture coming through. How did you find all of that sort of response to?
Well, one of the things that we had in the early 80s and in the late 70s and the early 80s was we had Rip It Up magazine. And Rip It Up was just incredibly important. It would go out there. Sure, it was created in Auckland, but they had regional columns and all the things, so it could tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
And so we'd turn up somewhere, I'd take the Mimis for an example. We'd turn up somewhere, I don't know, some Dannevirke.
Right, yep.
And you'd turn up in Dannevirke, and it's one pub in Dannevirke.
Little Viking town.
The Viking town, exactly. You turn up there, and there's everybody under the age of 25 has turned up in the pub.
Mm. Right, yes. Yeah.
Because they had so few people going through.
Yes.
So when something interesting comes to town, but more and more as we went around the country too, there were these regional scenes popping up, especially in the post-punk era.
Yeah.
You know, after things like AK-79 turned up and little record labels started popping up around the country. And so all of a sudden you had these like really thriving little scenes in Palmerston North and New Plymouth and places like that. So... yeah.
Amazing. Okay, Simon Grigg, phoning in from Audio Culture. Should we play another tune? What would you like to play and why?
What about, since I mentioned AK-79, should we play The Scavengers?
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yes. Let's hit that. You've selected True Love.
Why? Yeah, True Love. The original version. Nice. Not the second version, which is on the album as well.
Okay, fingers crossed. We've got the right one here.
It's the one we've got.
The other one's under Marching Girls.
Okay.
The second one's by the Marching Girls. So if it's the Scavengers version, it's the right one.
All right. Okay. We're going to tentatively hit play on this and come on.
These are my old flatmates at the time. And so
they might be angry if you play the wrong one, Johnny.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here we go.
Scavengers, True Love, Simon Gregg, you there?
Yeah. Yes. So AK-79, obviously that came off AK-79, which has got to be one of the great New Zealand albums, a seminal album.
Definitely.
We were tossing around with the various artist albums could be in the list for Audio Cultures. Thing. And we kind of came to the decision that if an album had been created with all new tracks by various artists, like it had been created as an album, it was eligible. But like, as Chris Burke said, 20 great rugby songs is not eligible.
Yes. Well, I mean, I had a moment where I looked at the list the other day and I noticed Darcy Clay's Jesus I Was Evil EP seemed to not be on there. Too short, not an album.
Well, I don't know what happened there, but it's on there now.
It's on there now? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, because it was an album. They extended it to an album anyway.
I mean, yes.
I think they put live tracks and stuff on there as well. But, you know, you can't. It's, what was the original EP, 4 or 5 tracks? I can't remember.
Yeah, 4 or 5, yep. Yeah, not too many. And
so, I mean, it's a real fine line. You know, the Herbs EP as well, the mini album that Herbs did.
Mm-hmm.
It's 6 tracks, but, you know, God, they don't get more sort of seminal than the first Herbs EP.
That would be an album today anyway. I'm not taking the mickey out of current artists, but, you know, 6 tracks would almost be an album these days.
Yeah, exactly. So if I was allowed to vote, one of my possibles would be AK-79, partially because I've got a personal attachment to it, as, you know, I'm involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
But also because I think it was ground zero for independent music New Zealand.
Mm. Yes. Yeah,
and from there, everything flows out.
Simon, I was playing. It's Jin here from the previous show, Tuesday 1 to 4. I was playing a track off the Dogs in Space soundtrack on my show last week by Birthday Boys Next Door, and Marching Girls' version of True Love is on that soundtrack. So
yeah, I mean, in Melbourne, it went
so far across the borders, which was something I think is probably sort of under-recognized in terms of crossing over to Australia's kind of scene as well. You hear the Dragons and, you know, the major success stories, but, you know, post-punk stuff from this country did resonate over there as well.
Absolutely. I mean, people like the Headless Chickens had hit singles and things. And I think a lot of the early Flying Nun stuff did pretty well in Australia.
Yeah, totally.
Because Australia were quite supportive of it.
Mm.
But yeah, the Marching Girls, of course, moved to Australia.
Right.
And so that when that movie was made, I think it split up by that stage.
Mm.
But after they split up, Brendan formed Dead Can Dance in Australia. And of course, he took it around the world.
Yeah. So it did travel. These little things that at the time might have felt sort of like your own little sort of group, little pocket of a scene. You know, now you can look back on it and go, actually, that was a significant moment in New Zealand cultural history, you know?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And you look at Dead Can Dance, sold millions of albums over the years.
Yeah.
And that kind of flows from a band that used to play at Swines in Durham Lane.
Yeah.
Now, so just to reiterate for everyone, we're talking about audioculture.co.nz being around for hitting the decade mark. The Audio Culture Classic NZ album readers poll is up for 2023. And if you want to jump on audioculture.co.nz and have a vote, you would go in the draw to win yourself $500 to spend it real groovy in a Torrens turntable, which is a sweet prize.
Mm, very good prize.
Simon,
you just have to have a New Zealand address. You can vote from anywhere in the world, but you have to have a New Zealand address because Real Groovy aren't that keen on shipping it to, you know, the Czech Republic or something like that.
No, nowhere. You don't want to be sending vinyl anywhere these days, to be honest.
No. Now, Simon, we've probably got time for one more song. What would you like to play and why?
Okay, I'm going to jump ahead a long way ahead and maybe the Feel Style.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Okay, give us some background on this.
Well, it's just like this was, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, well, late 80s, 90s, 2000s, the whole Pacifica thing exploded. And it was overdue. I mean, there'd been these like racial divides for so long. Everything's kind of came together. There was a real, in inner city Auckland in particular, was a real melting pot of racism, people and creeds and religions or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And but it all came together. But part of that was the evolution of New Zealand contemporary music introducing the languages of the South Pacific. So the Feel Style album, it turned up, is a lot of it is in Samoan. A lot of it's in English as well, of course. But it was also this album, you put it on, you went, what the fuck? You never heard anything quite like it before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much the sound, his the sound of where he came from and the sound of where he grew up. But it was also the sound of this fusion in the inner city, you know, all these things that happened. And it was just such an exciting record. And I just played it before.
Vibrant time, really, wasn't it?
And it still sounds as exciting as it did when it came out in 2005.
Mm.
So, yeah, killer track, killer album. Mm. And it should be on vinyl again.
Put everything on vinyl. Hey, Simon from Audio Culture, thanks so much for taking the time to chat to us this evening here in Aotearoa. Congratulations. We've had many a text come through saying congrats on the 10 years. To Audio Culture.
Well done, everybody.
Well deserved. And I mean, what a great resource for people to get in, you know, dig in, you know. Fantastic, mate.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah.
All right. Once again, check out audioculture.co.nz and chuck a vote through to their classic NZ album poll. All good. Let's hit this, the Feel Style.
Okay. Speak soon. Samoa, the sea, the fire, fear, fear, the fire, eat it out with law, DJ Raw, feel style. Somalia, bear, mare, Uma, Ila, Ila, Sila, Sila, Emo, Emo, my bear, the wheel, my gang, the farmer, key, Mumo, Kadela, Emma, fire, Oma, Emma, fire, Mushika, Faka, the lava, Ogo, Mato, because they have a sense, okay, if I see her, Mumu, Maka, Pewa, Loy, Loy, Massima, Eo, Oma, Somalia, Bear, Ila, Somalia, Bay, okay, no, the game, Wheeler, Suma, our four, a gay, call out, sister, Somalia, yeah, me, oh, my lady.
sa Miki ma pasi pasi ma io prima po e si la fia e su ma e che fai la va mea e o so ai lo va mea o ma o camolea cale pe fa a pea cale pe mole a wala che le mi noi mi noi mai musica le po poi su ma die la va mea mea uma a voi o lo ma oi rega su ma e sa sa lo fica su ma e Sofia ai foi falso som ai anga sala se vai no pau pau que eu amo co ilegal vai fa fe ai sa fa ka kuai foi foi pe fa pe o que que ai de lau lau fa va e ma ai sau ai so so mai la ia sau ai mo foi na no sole pe a e de ma fai shiva mai shiva shiva mai shiva mai ava ava ai me le anga so ma ai suma die pe o ia pe a fa lai musica mo le fai ai se ka mai de
Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.